for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I am Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, D Nice.
Or DD.
No. Key Appeal substitute teacher. He says it's D Nice.
Yeah, I would have fought for that. I think that my least favorite nickname was Niecy coming up. That was bad.
Niecy. Bad. We need to start a new hashtag, like blackest songs ever. We need to go with blackest nicknames. Blackest nicknames ever. Well, Niecy, how you doing?
I'm good.
So this week has been interesting. Ending it on a positive note, but we'll get there. So I'm not going to give any room to the most ignorant person making headlines this week, but I will give some room to the racist Michigan Senator, Nolan Berg, who said that he can't change the race of the African-American students. So, you know, we can't really do anything about their bad test scores.
Oh, I'm so happy he said that.
What makes you happy?
I'm so happy. I mean, I kind of have to give props to Stacey Patton, who really articulated this well, where she talked about he who shall not be named, who is also running for president. And how just the appearance of him in the national scene saying all this like xenophobic, racist, blatantly horrible stuff gives license and more brazenness to these closet racists that just make policy and make laws and do stuff that is so clear, has clearly racist effects. But we so often like to distill racism to these individual experiences and these individual, I just said, I hate black people, or I just said something that can be clearly construed as, you know, the problem with black people is that they're black, right? Like, so, I mean, I think that's great because that's clearly his thought process. And that's
He said he has one black employee.
Oh, snap. I guess we just have to rethink our whole, yeah, we have to give him a pass on all of that.
His words were taken out of context. He has a black employee.
Not a black employee. Wow, that's awesome. That makes me reconsider everything. That probably means that that person, yeah, he's clearly John Brown. He's out there doing the anti-racist work that needs to be done in the state of Michigan, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Not one black employee and all that.
Well, if you do live in Michigan and you didn't hear about it, his name is Senator Marty Knollenberg. He's from the 13th District, Republican. And please write him, do what you can. The American Federation of Teachers already came out quite publicly with a very harsh statement stating research tells us what needs to be done and the absurd thought of changing a child's race has nothing to do with any of it. But, you know, he continued to defend himself. So I don't see much hope. Use your voices if you choose to.
Yeah. And I don't really believe that white people that have that line of thinking can come to Jesus fast enough to change any of the racist policies that they've clearly already implemented or to do any kind of positive work within his tenure as that time. So I would advocate for like to shut him down. I mean, like, I like what they're doing with Rahm Emanuel right now.
Right.
Where they're just like blocking streets and like, you know, he has to resign. Because what these politicians do when this stuff comes out is they try to distance themselves from any level of accountability, and then they've transformed. You know, they got the black employee, maybe they got a black girlfriend.
Right.
Right. Which means absolutely nothing. But, you know, in the mind of a racist, it means a lot. Because how can I have personal relationships with black people when I believe in white supremacy? Well, you know, slaveholders had personal relationships with black people.
They were
the nannies. They were, you know, the cobblers. They were doing all manner of stuff to make the American economy work. Somehow, that did not lead to their freedom per se. Right. So I think that the whole kind of narrative around, gosh, I've just been wishing for superpowers lately. Like, maybe it's all the superpower movies that are coming out. Like, I just feel like there's some things that you should be saying in 2015 that should make you metaphorically disappear. Right. Like, from any kind of position of influence, when the political Voldemort comes up with this. With his mass deportation or his Muslims can't come in here. I said
we're not giving him room. So.
Wow.
I'm shutting that down. I'm not giving him room.
Wow.
There's enough reporting on that. We don't have to take that on.
That's totally fine. I'm just saying that you're like a particular defense of the dark arts teacher, right? And you're a little bit like Snape. I'm just saying. I don't know what side you're on.
So much shade. Anyway, it's politicians, it's teachers, and it's also white girls who don't get into the alma mater of their family, who continue to bring race into all things education. You know who I'm talking about. Hashtag stay mad, Abby.
Oh,
Abigail Fisher has brought her case up against the Supreme Court yet again. I honestly don't understand, after already losing this case in 2008, how it's coming up again, but it is. So let me just give you some stats. She wanted to get into the University of Texas in Austin. UT Austin has a top 10% plan, which accounts for 92% of its admissions. That means that they guarantee Texas high school seniors in the top 10% of their graduating class admission to the university. Then they have some other tools that they use to account for that remaining 8%. Obviously, that's going to be extremely competitive. This chick says because of her race, she wasn't admitted. But 42 of the 47 people who had lower scores than Fisher and were admitted were white.
Whoop.
So, you know, if you read everything thoroughly, this chick had absolutely no claim to it being about race. But again, she's getting airtime. She is getting airtime. And with the climate that we have with the current justices, she could actually go somewhere with this.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm also glad in a sense that she's getting airtime because she doesn't have an airtight case. I'd be afraid if she did. She makes the case for affirmative action to a certain degree. I think one thing that you forgot to mention was that she graduated in the 12th percentile. So they guaranteed everyone in the top 10 percentile admission to UT. She graduates in the 12th percentile. So then they were like, okay, so we got 8% of these places left. Where do you stack up? Oh, she had basically no extracurriculars. You know, she was a lackluster student and she basically is blown out of the side of her neck. But one thing that I don't think she's doing is getting a college degree, right? Like, so this in 2008, I want the backstory. Like, what's she been doing besides, like, frying turkey legs at the carnival?
Wow.
Since 2008? Because that's a long time ago.
It is a long time ago.
My grown child was a minor in 2008. Mm-hmm. Right? So this idea that you're just going to, she's like Kim Davis. This is her full-time job.
Right.
What's been happening with, you know, these Joe the Plumbers, Sarah Palin, these extremely mediocre people that their claim to fame is whiteness and a false sense of victimhood is that's become their career. And there's money to support them in that because they relate to the populace as everyday people. I think that Abigail Fisher has lost that relatability. I think that Kim Davis has lost some of her relatability, but they write it until can't write it anymore. I really think that in the University of Texas, I mean, part of the problem is that there's such a wide variety of school districts in Texas. So if you're in Texas and you live in a certain neighborhood, the quality of education may be a lot lower than if you live in another neighborhood.
I don't think that's specific to Texas, though.
No, it's a national problem. So what they're saying is that, well, Black students have a higher chance because they have such shitty schools. Okay, so how about Black students not have such shitty schools?
Right.
And if I'm in an all-Black neighborhood and I'm in the top percent, I'd probably be in the top 10% even if my school wasn't so shitty, right? Like, it really doesn't matter. I think what they're trying to say is that they don't really want Black people to have any representation in Texas. And I think this was underscored by what the Michigan governor said when he was talking about, well, we can't turn them white. So therefore, therein lies the problem.
Exactly. Well, in other news, which unfortunately didn't make the headlines that Laquan McDonald made, we had another video released, another shooting, a shooting that happened just 8 days apart from Laquan McDonald's shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Officer George Hernandez shot Ronald Johnson III 5 times in the dark.
In the back.
In the back. And the state attorney, Anita Alvarez, our favorite person, has decided she won't press charges because Johnson was holding a gun. You know,
which witnesses say that the cop planted.
Right.
So, yeah, right. So witnesses are claiming this guy gets out of an unmarked vehicle, shoots a man who's running away from him
right. In
the back 5 times in the dark, and then goes and plants a gun on him. And then fills out a police report that says something totally different. It's like, you know, when the unicorn came down and then I saw the rainbow and I realized he was the chosen one. And, you know, these police reports are by and large amazing works of fiction.
Right.
Created by these police officers. And even though the video shows very clearly that major points in that police report were just lies. She won't indict because she doesn't indict killer cops. The only reason why she's indicting the killer of Laquan McDonald is because of political pressure. She is voted in and supported by killer cops. That's how she's in the position she's in. She'd rather see you go to jail for having a switchblade or 5 ounces of marijuana if you are Black than for seeing you do one day in jail for killing a Black person on the street. That's how the law is enforced in Chicago. And she needs to lose her job. Just like the police chief lost his job. Now, the kicker is, though, is that she's in a Kim Davis type position wherein she has been elected into that position. So it's not something that someone can just say. No political official can look at an elected official and say, you can't do that. You're not in there anymore. Otherwise, Kim Davis, to be honest, would be gone. So that's the situation that we're in with Anita Alvarez. She knows that her constituency, which clearly is racist cops, supports her in this.
I agree. Before we move into our second segment, I wanted to ask you what you thought about my main man, Stephen Curry's wife.
Oh, we're talking about this now. Okay. All right. See, okay. Because I had said, I told you what I felt about her. I think she is slut shaming.
She said she wasn't doing that, though.
You know what? She did it like the aunties. That be shading the hell out of you. And then if you come straight forward with them and you take their logic to its conclusion and you present that back to them, they're like, I was not saying that at all. I was just saying it would be nice if maybe you found a husband. But that don't mean there's anything wrong with you being a single girl. I just, you know, I'm praying for the Lord to work on your edges. But that don't mean that I think that your hair is a hot mess. I hear other people say that and they should stop. That's exactly what she did. She went on social media and was like trashy and trendy and using certain words, applied words to describe showing less of your body when you wear clothes. And then when people jumped on that misogynist bandwagon and was like, yeah, these hoes out here, blah, 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 blah. She's like, that doesn't mean that you can trash anything and anybody. Look, if you're going to make an I statement and talk about what you want to wear, why do that in comparison to anybody? If you want to talk about this is what I do, what I wear, how I like to look, by all means, you got the name recognition to launch a brand at this point, do you? But why do it in contrast to, and then these women, blah, 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 blah. They are a basketball. I have seen her in some outfits back out, ass falling down. I mean, come on. Really? You don't think it's the digital age? And now you put yourself on blast.
She got ahead of herself. That's my advice.
Here's the thing about misogyny and racism and her not owning what she said, and also this Michigan guy not owning what he said. A lot of times these are unconscious thoughts. I think that was a statement that underscored a lot of misogyny that she probably didn't even know that she had. And then she's looking at these toe bashing types of tweets that came up in support of her tweet and realizes that they're really one and the same, what she said and all this other stuff. So then she, of course, has to distance herself from it. But I don't really think that a lot of people have fully articulated all of their beliefs. And then Twitter gives them this platform to just start saying stuff. And then within some of that stuff comes some beliefs that they don't even know that they had. So what you gonna do when your daughter is rolling out with the trendiest, trendy, trendy thing? So what you gonna do? You gonna put that on lock? Okay, good luck. What you gonna do if your daughter is rolling out with a cute little outfit with her and her girls or whatever and somebody decides to sexually assault her? Is that her fault because she's trendy?
Well, you just said the key word for our second segment, sexual assault. I am so relieved more than anything, to be honest, to have woken up to the verdict today of Daniel Holtzclaw's court case. 18 convictions of the 36 counts.
Could have been 36 convictions, but okay.
The jury still recommended 236 years of life in prison. I think while anyone who really cared about this case knew that this was the outcome that it had to be, nobody was sure that it was going to be this way because he did wind up with an all-white jury. So...
Yeah, he's not all white, right? Like, so...
No, he's not white, but his jury was white.
I think in certain circles he could have passed as white, but he's half Asian, and the love life of an Asian guy, Paige, who is an actual Asian guy, he's run by an Asian guy, has gone in depth talking about speculating on, you know, how on anti-Blackness within the Asian community and how that may have contributed to him targeting Black women with some sort of record so that he could rape them and sexually assault them. I think one thing that helped in this case is just the sheer amount woman that it happened to. So the amount of...
Well, the amount that came forward, right? I believe it was 13 women who came forward for the case. That doesn't mean that that was all of them.
Oh, we know from rape statistics that if you've got 13 coming forward, it's probably the number, the real number is probably more like 30
right.
or 50. You know, it's a lot. You know, very few victims or survivors come forward after that has happened to them, especially when it has to do with a case with this much scrutiny and it's a police officer. And
it's a police officer who was raping them and assaulting them while on duty. That's how gully he was. And he said, no one will believe you.
Right. And that's part of what helped the case was that they had the GPS and they used the GPS on his vehicle to locate some of the women that he raped because they didn't have all of them, didn't have any arrest record or anything. And it was like a serial killer, right? Because in the beginning, it seems like he was more sneaky.
Right.
And then as it became clear that nobody was even filling out a citizen's complaint, he just got more and more and more brazen. So the one that actually came forward that birthed this entire chain of events was a middle-class Black woman who was driving through a lower-income Black neighborhood. He made some assumptions about her, and soon as he assaulted her, she got herself together and went to the precinct. Had no record and was basically the perfect victim, so to speak.
Right, in the white man's eyes, who's never going to go against a police officer in this case, normally.
And it became clear that, you know, he had a past. Yeah, I'm really happy that he's going to jail. I'm really happy that he cried like a baby, so he's obviously feeling some pain. But
some of the victim supporters sang happy birthday because it was his birthday.
29th birthday. There's another piece of this, which is he gets sentenced on January 21st or the 12th?
The 21st, I believe.
The 21st. And so we don't know if it's really going to go down for 200 some odd years. But it seems even if they half it, that means he will never get out of jail in his life.
Well, with those first degree rape convictions, it would be really hard for a judge not to give him life, I believe.
But white people are supporting him, though. And I know they've raised all of his legal fees so far. And I know they've been raising money to support his family and all that goodness. So this will go to appeal. We'll see.
We'll see. Well, there was something else that came up this week on sexual assault from the Black Youth Project 100. And, you know, that's an activist group which believes in restorative justice. Many of its leaders are Black and queer. And it's run by a woman named Charlene A. Carruthers, who is a Black queer feminist community organizer. That's how she calls herself. And they've gone about handling the situation completely differently. So a person named, who goes by Kay, to protect her identity, has come forward concerning one of the leaders in the project who, you know, is kind of rising through the ranks, is becoming somewhat of a star. And she came forward about how he assaulted her just 3 years ago in her own apartment while she was asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And the project's leadership reacted swiftly, reached out to her, had a meeting with her, and did what they called a mandatory suspension of his membership.
Mm.
So this is really the opposite of what we have seen in the past in Black activism and civil rights movements, where sexual assault was ignored, what did we say, swept under the rug. This time it's very different.
Right. When I was first coming out in the 90s, one term that was often used was woman-identified woman.
Right.
And I always come back to this term because when I see women, particularly hoteps, we talked about this last week, prioritizing the images, the careers, the livelihoods of Black men over the clear harm and the lives of women, that really rings true to me that most women, especially if they haven't had any kind of like counterculture ideology, they're with the mainstream, they're heterosexual, they're Aisha Curry, are male identified. And so they prioritize that view, they prioritize male lives, and they are complicit supporters of the patriarchy in that sense. So that when sexual assault happened, and we talked about this idea of Black empowerment last week, really being about Black male empowerment, the old idea of Black empowerment, right?
Right.
So when sexual assault happened in the civil rights movement, there definitely was this sense of like, look, we have other priorities besides this Black woman right here. And we also didn't know what we know now about the long-term effect of, on the survivors of sexual assault. And then, you know, you also have all these tropes that come into play, like the trope of the strong Black woman who doesn't need any support, who doesn't need any protection. And now fast forward to the situation that you have in 2015 with the Black Youth Project, which is highly Black queer-led, female-led, woman-led. With that in mind, I think that this is a shift that you will see when you have people that aren't necessarily male identified that say, no, all lives matter. Right. All lives matter in a real way, right? Like not as a response to shut down anybody. And that means that if someone has been harmed, that that harm needs to be addressed seriously and it needs to be remedied as much as possible. The guy that was accused has remained mum and lawyered up, but they haven't identified him. They're just going through the process that apparently was clearly detailed and that we definitely need to continue to detail as we attempt to bring about any kind of activist spaces. Because there's a, definitely an idea that used to exist even before the term safe space became a thing, that there are certain spaces where people share either your identity or your politics that are going to be free from certain kinds of harms. We know that's not true. It's not true in the church. It's not true in the lesbian commune. It's not true. It's not true anywhere. It's just not true.
Right.
Harm can happen anywhere. So how you're going to do some sort of confrontation of that harm, some conflict resolution is, it needs to be detailed. I'm in awe that they acted swiftly. I'm in awe that they went ahead and did that. And I'm in awe that there's definitely a clear reaction from them. We'll see how it plays itself out.
Well, you know, they've said that the process, it's evolving with each step. It's not something that is set in stone. They very much follow the ideology of SNCC, right? That people have to come together and discuss things and come to an agreement. This restorative justice process of reconciliation is what they're trying to do between the perpetrator and the victim. I think I worry a little bit about Kay's standpoint. I understand why she chose not to go to the police because she had already suffered a sexual assault where she was raped, went to the police and was very clear that that whole process was even more traumatizing than the rape itself. So I understand not wanting to go through that again, but there seemed to be like this deep desire to educate this dude in some way. And I don't
I mean, part of what she wanted was to be very graphic about the details of the case as Kay described it, was that she invited him up. She had talked about her previous rape case. He seemed super sympathetic.
Right.
He was on board with all of her politics. He thought, you know, he was awesome. Invited him up and he started to come on.
Invited him up due to false pretenses, which he admitted to, right? He said he wanted a cup of coffee or something before he got on the road. And then when she made it for him, he said, oh, I actually just used that as an excuse to get up here.
And then so he starts coming on to her and she's like, no, very clearly, I'm not into anything you're trying to throw down. And through their discussion into the night, she got sleepy. She wakes up and his fingers were inside. So he was assaulting her. He resisted and
immediately asked him to leave.
And he left.
Right.
Now, one of the things that she wants him to do in this restorative justice process is to admit that what he did was assault.
Right. And because right now he's calling it a misunderstanding.
Right. And that is so demeaning. But it's a hard thing because people, as we know, say all kinds of things that they don't mean. So he could say anything. He could say, actually, it was rape. And actually, it was this. And actually, I was so, so very wrong. And not mean any of it.
Right.
And part of the reason why I know he's lawyered up is because if he says certain things, he could land in prison.
Right.
So I know that we want to develop systems within our community, but then there are certain legal realities that people that are accused also have to grapple with, and they're going to lawyer up and they're going to protect themselves. And I'm sure that they can come to some sort of agreement about that, but I wouldn't want him in any kind of leadership position. I'm new to restorative justice. I don't know if I really, really, really believe in restorative justice in the way that I've seen sometimes it goes down. The I'm sorry, and then they're free to do more shit. I think there's some people like George Zimmerman, I don't want to restore. Like if it, in that case, to me, that seems like a predatory dude. I don't want him in a position to prey on other young women.
Well, this is the thing, right? Kay had been assaulted. Kay works in sexual assault very actively. And even she felt like this was a person she could trust. He was saying all of the right things. And that is problematic. That means he's, you know, he's charismatic. He's likable. He's probably a good orator.
And he's a sociopath.
And he's a sociopath. He waits for her to fall asleep to do whatever it is that he thought he was about to do. This is problematic. I don't want to see this dude come back in any leadership role. Maybe at some point he could join their actions, you know, be on the streets. But I feel like this is done. This is a wrap. There's no space for someone like him in a leadership position. Otherwise, the great organization that BYP 100 is loses its credibility a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Go on. Sorry.
Oh, no. No, you said it. You said it. I don't want to restore him into a leadership position. And maybe what they mean by restorative justice is more like make him a better person and try to turn him into someone who does not do harm anymore. Okay.
In any case, that BYP is led by the person who is Charlene and other great people, but I've just seen Charlene speak. I'm really convinced about her priorities and her clarity. And I'm very happy, as you said as well, that they acted as swiftly as they did. And I just hope that Kay can find some healing and can find some closure and isn't forced in this reconciliation process to do anything that she doesn't want.
And I like the point that you made before, that this is a sexual assault educator and it still took her a while to come forward.
Right.
To come forward.
3 years.
Yeah, she didn't come forward immediately. So I'm so thankful for the woman. It doesn't matter that it takes you a while to come forward. I'm so happy when people come forward. I'm so happy that they put James' name on blast. That's why I came forward, right? And because after one person comes forward, then, you know, people pile on.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if that happens with the BYP situation.
I wouldn't be surprised either. It hasn't happened yet, but that doesn't mean it won't. So going into our third segment, things that we're excited about, things that are making us happy. Who's going to start it off this week?
You this time. It's your turn.
Oh, goodness. Tonight, specifically, I'm excited about the Performing Artist and Music Social, I think it's called. It's going to be at the Brixton Ritzy. The Ritzy is...
It sounds fancy.
It's not. Well, maybe it is. It's kind of like a historical cinema in the middle of Brixton, as they like to say it here.
I think that post-gentrification is going to be called Brixton.
Brixton.
Yes.
Well, it's not post-gentrified yet. One of the women from my Black Queer Women's group here in London is one of the major organizers. They're expecting it to be a pretty big group of people. It's going to be spoken word. There's going to be some DJs who are really popular from London Pride. And, you know, with those DJs, that means we're going to have dance hall, hip hop, bashment, all of that stuff. Very much looking forward to that. So I said what I was looking forward to. I feel like I should have more on my list. What are you looking forward to? What's making you happy, what you're excited about?
So I will preface that by saying that I came back from another out-of-town thing.
Right.
And I'm just staying in the house. Like, that's kind of what I'm Or, you know, like there, you know what is just juicy and tasty and so comforting? It's like going to bed at 10. I love that.
You're
a mess. That's awesome.
You're a mess.
And you can like wake up at 6 and be ready. You're just like, that was 8 hours. That's awesome. I love that. So I'm missing a ton of stuff, but I'm doing a project called Black Austria.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm looking forward to transcribing these interviews and translating them and launching that project, which I hope to launch within the week. So that's great. So Black Austria is a documentary project where I'm just getting firsthand experiences from Black people that live here in Austria with me. That's awesome.
That is awesome. So when can we look for that, or where can we look for that?
It will be launched at blackaustria.com,
mm-hmm.
but it's at some time within the week.
At
some point.
Okay.
Specific dates have been given. Do you know it's really hard transcribing interviews?
No, it's not. I've done it.
You ain't doing it for me?
No, so I'm not, because I've done it.
Exactly. So I find it really hard. And people talk really fast.
They do.
Especially in German.
Oh, you're doing...
Yeah, right?
Mm.
Because why? Exactly.
Deep. You need to hire a student assistant.
I need to hire several assistants. Anyone want to be my assistant? I am actually very much hiring. And I feel like all of my plans have been so, I don't know. I went to go to a Spanish meetup last night at a Viennese cafe. And I get there and they're like, nah. It was like The Wiz, the original Wiz, the movie, where you walk in and you're like, the color is green. Actually, now we're not doing Spanish. We're doing Esperanto. I was like, I don't want to learn Esperanto.
Yes. Switch it up like that.
They did. They switched it up. So I sat there through a 1-hour long Esperanto primer.
That sounds fun. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. You can find us at the same place on Facebook. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. Until next time, peace out.